So that's the result of this encouraging letter. Now Judas and Silas, themselves being prophets also, exhorted and strengthened the brethren with many words. In other words, they contributed ministry to all of these believers from the Antioch area. And after they'd stayed there for a time, they were sent back with greetings from the brethren to the apostles. However, it seemed good to Silas to remain there. And Paul and Barnabas also remained in Antioch, teaching and preaching the word of the Lord. They've gone full circle now. They were out on the road for a year. Before that, they'd been teaching for a year. Now they're back with many others also. We're going to read all the way to the end of the chapter. And this last little episode is one of the most comforting ones in the entire book of Acts to me, if you know the whole story. It's comforting because here are godly men, men filled with the Holy Spirit, who can't agree about something silly. And they can't agree about it to such an extent that they can't minister together anymore. And so they split up. And the reason it's encouraging is the number one, that can happen to good people. But the really encouraging thing is that it was resolved later. And in the meantime, God blessed both of their ministries. I was reading that this week, and it just filled me with hope from people that have left here because they didn't agree with me. They thought I shouldn't be a pastor. So they went someplace else. I'm praying that God will bless their ministry. I know I'm praying he'll bless this ministry. My prayer is that he'll fix it. And, of course, he did here. But let's read the story. Then after some days, Paul said to Barnabas, "Let's go back now and visit our brethren in every city where we have preached the word of the Lord, and let's see how they're doing." Just wrap your brain around this for a minute. What happened for a whole year every single place they went? They got beat up. They got chased out of town. Paul was stoned to the point that they thought he was dead, stoned with real stones. Paul's saying, "Let's go back and see how all the believers are doing." How do you stop guys like this? Well, you kill them. Well, they don't seem to be actually too worried about that either. So he says, "Let's go back." Now, Barnabas, verse 37, was determined to take with them John, called Mark. Remember, Mark, he's the Mark that wrote the Gospel of Mark. He was Barnabas's nephew. And that's why he went with them the first time. But remember, a couple chapters ago, he wimped out. They got to an especially, they just had a few getting chased out of town episodes, and Mark suddenly did not feel the missionary call on his life anymore, and he kind of wanted to go back home to mommy. The nice, safe church that met in his mom's house. He didn't want to be around the big, bad pagans. Paul says, "I'm sorry, I don't care whose nephew he is." Paul insisted that they should not take with them the one who had deserted them in Pamphylia and had not gone with them to the work. The contention became so sharp that they parted from one another, and Barnabas took Mark, sailed to Cyprus, but Paul chose Silas and departed, being commended by the brethren to the grace of God, and he went through Syria and Cilicia, strengthening the churches. Can I just peek ahead and tell you how God resolved this? Well, I don't know how God resolved it. I just know that you get two Christians, however silly and stupid and selfish and opinionated they might be when they're in their flesh. This is an example of a ministry being split up over really something that really was silly. Who was right? Was Barnabas right? Was Barnabas just saying, "Man, my sister will kill me if I don't take Mark? I mean, you know, she really wants him to go into the ministry, and we got to lighten up. Hey, he's just a kid. He's never been out of Jerusalem before. He'd never even really seen any real full-blown pagans before, much less had his life threatened. I think we should give him another chance." And Paul says, "You know what? It's too dangerous. He'll just hold us back." Who is right? Well, technically, you could kind of present a case for both sides. Being right But the way they handled it was not the way to handle it. So what did God do? God just blessed them both. He blessed Barnabas' ministry with Mark. He blessed Paul's ministry with Silas. And in 1 Corinthians 9, written sometime later, Paul commends Barnabas' ministry and apparently did not hold a grudge at all. In Colossians chapter 4 and Philemon verse 24, Mark is included in Paul's list of his most trusted associates. So Mark grew up, and Paul forgave him. And in 2 Timothy, by the very end of Paul's ministry, Paul told Timothy, I need Mark with me. I need him here. So I just love that. It gives me chills. Just the whole normality of it. It's happened to me. People I love, people I trusted just said, sorry, I don't agree with you on this, and we can't work together. See, if that happens, and it may happen in your life, the thing to do is don't stop serving God. If you have to go someplace else and serve God, don't stop serving God, because that's what the devil wants. That's why Satan, we talked about it Sunday, why does Satan try to divide churches? Why does he try to divide families? Why does he try to divide denominations? So the same reason. Jesus said, a house that's divided against itself can't stand. It'll fall. So what does the devil do? He just tries to just anything to just get it divided. He just wants to stop the work. So I love that. Let's rewind back up to verse 11. Couldn't resist comments, but there are still some nuggets to dig out of here. But I'm glad that episode was included, and I'm glad that we see the whole story, because here's two of my heroes doing something really stupid. Really, I would expect better of them. God says, oh, okay, give them time. Yeah, they're being silly. You know what? There's work to do. They're men that want to serve me, so I'll bless both of them, and we'll fix it later. I'll teach them about me. They'll learn a few things. Mark will grow up. Maybe Mark's mom will pass away. You know, maybe she'll go to be with Jesus. Maybe she'll stop being a pressure issue. I don't know. I don't know the things that happen. I just know that God fixed it. They all grew up, and it wasn't the end of the story. And I can't tell you that I am praying how I am yearning and praying for that in my own life. I find myself groaning and groaning over people that have been divided from me. And I don't even know what to say anymore. I certainly don't tell God what to do. You know what I pray most often? I just say, God, please make it right. Because it's not right. It's not right the way it is. It's not your way. Please make it right. Please stop what the enemy's doing. And I find great hope in this story. So let's rewind. Let's look at the comforting letter. There's a few great things to dig out of it. I went back and I reread the whole chapter 9 of Amos that James quoted back in verses 16 and 17. We're not really in a hurry, but this would be quite a long rabbit trail. But I could spend a couple of studies just talking about the whole thing that God did when he brought Israel back to their homeland. Do you know that no people has ever remained intact as a culture in all of human history by being away from their homeland for a fraction of the time that the Jewish people were away from their homeland? They have never even survived as a culture, much less ever come back to their homeland. God says, okay, here's what's going to happen. They're going to be scattered to the four corners of the earth for a long time, but I'm going to bring them back. Notice how in verse 16 and 17 of our text where James is quoting from Amos, notice how many times the personal pronoun is in there. God is going to say, I'm going to do it. It'll be me. Well, those of you that were old enough to remember the foundation of the nation Israel, or if you're fascinated by that like I am and you read about it, you realize basically for God to get that done, he had to go against the collective vote of almost the entire civilized world that didn't want it to happen. There's still several hundred million people surrounding that country, smaller than California, that don't want it to be in existence. The stuff that God did to fulfill this prophecy in Amos, here's what's thrilling about it. Took a long time. Yeah, God had to sort of fight against the entire world to do it. He's still doing it, by the way. There's still people trying to wipe him from the face of the earth. Sworn to do it. Hundreds of millions of people. But here's the thing that thrills me. Why did God do it? Why did God take all of that time, go through all of that to bring all of this about? The answer is astonishing. Because he said he would. What's the big deal? Well, but that's the same God that's made you promises. That's the same God that may have promised you about the person that you love that's away from him right now. And you cried out in the middle of the night and said, "Oh, God." And God says, "Don't worry, I'll bring him back." Isn't it important to know that God doesn't make statements like that lightly? See, I love that. Because that's the God, that God is the one I'm entrusted in my whole life story to, which my whole life story, which stinks right now, which doesn't even look like a story. But when I go to that God, he says, "Oh, read my resume, check it out. You know, I do have a plan. It does go all the way to the end. I'm not winging it. I'm not making this up as I go along." When I read this whole thing that James read, and I realized the enormity of what James was saying and what Peter said in his first confrontation. He said, God always had a plan for the Gentiles, start to finish. Yeah, he couldn't find anybody really to be on the same page with them for a long time, but God doesn't really need people to be on the same page with him to fulfill his promises. Man, I need to hear that. And then I just flat love verse 18. Known to God, I even looked the verb up. It means to know thoroughly, to be fully acquainted with, to know every detail of something. Known to God from the beginning. King James Bible, I think says from the beginning of the earth. It's a quotation from Hebrew. And the Hebrew word speaks of eternity past the vanishing point. So before there was before the original clock was started by God, before he pressed the go button in linear time and the whole time-space continuum, before that, God already completely knew everything he was going to do. Why do I need to know that? Because I don't have a clue what he's going to do. And every time I thought I did, I was wrong. So I kind of been living my life the last few years like, okay, I'll be faithful. And if you would just like to clue me in on where this is all going, that would be wonderful. I'd sleep a lot better, but I'm going to be faithful. I'm not going to stop doing what you told me to do, but I don't have a clue where this is all going. And it's so easy in that frame of mind to start thinking that God doesn't have a clue. God's just winging it. God is waking up each day going, "Oh no, what are we going to do? Did you read the stock report? Did you see the Democrats won? Oh, what are we going to do?" No, he never has a moment like that. He knows exactly what he's going to do. And of course, in context, James is saying, "Hello, you memorize these scriptures, you sing songs about this. That includes Gentiles. So let's get this whole thing straightened out." And he says, we need to stop this whole, "We came from headquarters and they told us to tell you." We need to stop that immediately. You know what? There's still people like that out there. I sure hope we don't have anybody left in our church. I know we had a few people like that at one time, but they got called on it, and they never came back. There was a time in my life thinking of verse 24, where in the letter they said, hey, we know these guys threw you into a nosedive, but we just want you telling no matter what they said, we didn't authorize them. We didn't send them. There was a time in my life, it was probably, well, up till then, it was the worst time in my whole life. I was extremely fragile. I was very close to jumping off a bridge for quite a while. I was living on Cape Cod. There were people who hated me, and they weren't just satisfied that I wasn't ministering, they just hated me. One of them called me on the phone. I have no idea how he found out where I was. I was living in somebody else's house. I was working for room and board by remodeling these people's home. And he called me up and he said, I was talking to Chuck Smith the other day. Chuck Smith told me that he thinks you're a stench in God's nostrils. And he started saying this stuff. And these were like arrows that went right straight into my heart. And in those days, I had no way to defend myself. Broken people, especially people who had been really abused by people they trusted, you don't know how to protect yourself anymore. That little filter that says, lie, 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 is not there. Anybody can say anything and it goes right straight to your heart. That's why you got to be really careful. When you just got to be in your bonnet and you're venting at somebody, be really careful. You might be destroying them. It was destroying me. Didn't sound anything like the Chuck that I knew. But all I did is I took it right to my heart and I wanted to die. And about a month later, I got home from work and there was a note pinned to the refrigerator that said, call Chuck Smith at his home. And there was his home phone number. And I went outside and I started hyperventilating and pacing back and forth and just thinking, oh no, oh no. Doesn't even seem like I'm the same person that I used to be then, but I just thought, here's the biggest gun in the whole universe, and he's found out where I am, and he's going to shoot me down. But how am I going to hide? I was teaching a Bible study. I felt guilty for teaching a Bible study. Oh no, Chuck found out I'm teaching a Bible study because this guy had told me I shouldn't be in ministry. So I called Chuck at his home phone, 4,000 miles away. He answered the phone. He said, Bob! And he had that great Chuck laugh, and he just sounded so happy to hear from me. He started asking me all kinds of questions in, like, I haven't seen for a long time. What do you know? I told him I was teaching a Bible study, and he said, oh, I'm so glad. He said, you really got a gift. He said, are you doing music? And I said, well, once in a while, but a lot of doors are closed. He said, oh, I'm just so glad. And he's talking, and all of a sudden, I'm starting to think, this doesn't sound like a guy that thinks I'm a stench in God's nostrils, you know? And so I started crying, which you don't want to do when you're on the phone with your hero and you're a guy. But I was so broken. And I said, well, you know, here's what I heard. And I told him what I heard. And I could hear his face getting red on the phone. He said, first of all, you know me well enough to know I would never say something like that to somebody else about you without talking to you personally. He said, I hope you know me well enough to know I wouldn't. And he said, the other thing is I never said that. That did a whole bunch of things for me. That did some things for me that lasted me 20 years. Because it showed me that I was being lied to. And that just because somebody has a Bible or somebody supposedly knows somebody else and they are privy to certain information, that they may not be telling me the truth. And it taught me to defend myself. Taught me to go straight to people and find out, did you really say that? And I'm chicken, so it's hard for me to do. Why am I spending all this time on it? Can you imagine several thousand people who know nothing about Jesus? The first time they hear about Jesus, they fling the doors of their hearts open. They receive the Holy Spirit. Some extraordinary things happen in their lives. And now supposedly, the very guys who hung out with Jesus and were his closest friends or the head of the church now send people up to your hometown and say, by the way, you're not really Christians. God really is kind of ticked off at you guys because you never did get circumcised. He's pretty ticked off at you guys because you're not keeping the whole law. What would that do to you? Well, if it's ever happened to you, you know what it does. It makes you want to die. It makes you think, and of course the devil's right there saying, yeah, yeah, boy, you know, you thought it was too good to be true, didn't you? So it was a big deal. It was a big deal the way they handled it. It was a big deal that Paul and Barnabas went all the way back down to Jerusalem. Not an easy thing. It said, let's look the lion in the eyes and let's find out if we've got a serious problem here with headquarters. And of course they didn't. Yeah, but the good thing was they wrote the letter. We have this written down. And it set a precedent. I think it's really interesting that the very first thing that when they wrote this comforting letter, the very first thing it established was, we are your brothers. And we consider you Gentiles to whom this letter is written. We consider you to be our brothers. And that whole deal about the men being circumcised and keeping the law of Moses, we didn't send them. That's not, it just took that whole issue, swept it completely off the table. Don't let this ever trouble you ever again. Now, what about the four things that they did tell them? The four guidelines. Can't you just see Captain Barbossa saying that with his gold tooth? The first thing was a morality issue, sexual immorality, and if you really understand pagan culture, there really was no such thing as sexual purity at all. In fact, in many of them, sexual immorality was part of their worship. You think it's bad today? It was worse then. So these people knew nothing about the Judeo-Christian ethic of what God designed sex to be. They knew nothing about it. So he said, well, this, you know, that if that's an issue that's not being properly dealt with, that needs to be dealt with right away. You aren't just like the people you grew up with.